All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Ted Amud Bet, in the new parak. Kohen Mashiach Shechata, a Kohen Mashiach who violated something that would mechayev him in a korban par, Kohen Mashiach, v'achar kach avar m'mishichuto, and then he was removed from being the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol can be removed, or Kohen Mashiach can be removed for a number of reasons, including the possibility that he became Tamei. That is something that the Gemara and Yoma discusses, that they appointed an interim Kohen Gadol to replace the Kohen Gadol who became Tameh. Then when the original serving Kohen Gadol comes back into service, the temporary Kohen Gadol is removed. So both the one who became Tameh was removed temporarily, so that might be the case, or the replacement Kohen Gadol is then removed after the original Kohen Gadol comes back into service. In both those instances, you have a removal. The other possibility is Zakein. If he comes too old to do the avoda, or he doesn't have the strength to do the avoda anymore, he could be removed from being the Kohen Gadol because of his inability to carry out whatever it is incumbent upon him as the Kohen Gadol, equivalent of a retirement. Or also the possibility that the Kohen Gadol got a mum that would disqualify him from being the Kohen Gadol any longer. So you can have the Kohen Gadol be removed for any of those reasons, which in truth leads to the problem that the Gemara in Yoma deals with, which is, once a Kohen Gadol was once a Kohen Gadol, now is no longer the Kohen Gadol, does he go back to being a Kohen Hajot? Or does he get stuck in this status of limbo somewhere between the Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hajot? Because that elevated Kedusha of Kohen Gadol never leaves him, that means that he can never really return to being a Kohen Hajot. But he can't be the Kohen Gadol because it's another Kohen Gadol. So now he's no longer the Kohen Gadol, but he's not a Kohen Hajot and leaves him in this limbo state. Also a Nasi that somehow we also violated a sin that he would bring a Seir for. And then he was deposed or removed from his position as the Nasi or the Melech. Kohen Mashiach may be par, but Nasi may be Seir. So in both of these cases, the din is the same, that they bring the korban, that they would have been chayav while they were the Kohen Mashiach, or while they were the Nasi. The violation happened while they were in those positions, and even though they're only bringing the korban after they have been removed from those positions, nevertheless, they bring the korban that would have been relevant at that time. Mashiach shavar mishichuto, a Kohen Gadol, who has now lost his position as the Kohen Gadol, and then he sins after he's already been removed from the Kuna Gdula. Similarly, a king who has been removed, and then he sins. Kohen Mashiach may be par. Here the din is different. The Kohen Mashiach, the Kohen Gadol, remains in that status of the Kohen Gadol, and therefore he brings a par. On the other hand, the Nasi becomes like a regular lay person. And he'll bring the korban that is associated with the layperson, that's a sira or kizba, for a chatat, as opposed to the Kohen Mashiach or the Kohen Gadol, who's going to bring a pyre in this case, after he's been removed from being the Kohen Gadol, after he is left being the Kohen Gadol. Alright, now, the next piece in the Gemara, the Girsa, is somewhat difficult to understand. Rashi here actually brings two lishonot. He doesn't change the Girsa, he brings two lishonot as to what the chiddush is in the Girsa of the Gemara. Hashta yesh lomar, here with regards to avar memishichito, v'achaka chata mevi par, in the case where he was already removed from his kiuna gedola, and then sins, he still brings a par kohen mashiach, chata, v'achaka avar memishichoto, tzricha lemeimar, in a case where he sinned while he was still the kohen gadol, and then was removed in that position, you need to tell me about that? It's obvious that if after he's deposed, or after he's removed from the Kuna Gedola, he still brings the Par Kohen Mashiach, then certainly in the case where he was still the Kohen Gadol, sinned, and then is bringing it afterwards, certainly in that case he has to bring a Par. What's the Chiddush here? Shum, Diktani Gabi Nasi, since it's written by the Melech, the Chiyavar Minisiyoto, V'achaka Chata, that when he is removed, deposed from his kingship, Kehejot, Maiti, he has the din of a lay person. Ha'achitani gabi Mashiach. Therefore, by the Kohen Gadol, it writes, Chata v'achar kach avar mevi par. And when he sinned, and then he was removed, then he brings a par. So the Gemara says something which doesn't necessarily correlate. The two are not connected. Because it spoke about the Nasi that sins after he is deposed. Therefore, I told you about a case of a Kohen Mashiach or a Kohen Gadol that sinned and then was removed. What seems to be indicated by the Gemara, you can't read it into the words, but the Gemara seems to be implying that it just kept the parallel structure in the Mishnah, which is that you have a din by the king, and therefore brought you the same din by the Kohen Mashiach. But the parallels that it draws is between the case of the Mashiach who has been removed, that he has a din like a layperson, and therefore brought you the case of Kohen Gadol that sinned before he was removed. You would expect that if you're talking about the parallels, that would have given you the parallel case, the cases that align. So you would expect that either that it told you about a Nasi sinned before he was removed, and then it was removed. He brings a Korban. So there it brought you the Kohen Mashiach also, which is something that you didn't need. Or the other way around, it would have told you that in the case where the Nasi is removed, he is like a layperson. Therefore, it tells you about the Kohen Mashiach after he is removed. That's not what it says. And therefore, the two Lashon of Rashi play on either side of this as to what the Chiddush is. According to Rashi, in the first Lashon, the Chiddush is that the Melech, when he sins while he is the Melech, and then is removed, he still brings the Korban like a Melech. You would have thought, just like if he sins after he's removed, he's treated like a Hedjot. Then also when he sins while he's the king, but then brings it afterwards, he should be treated like a Hedjot. Kamash Malon, that we don't say that, and that the Melech brings a Korban as a Melech when he sinned as the Melech, even though he was removed later on. So that's the Chiddush in the first Lashon. Or Lishna Achrina, Bishum Dektani Gabi Nasi, Kevar Migdulato, Barakachata, Kehejot Maiti. Once he's removed already, the Nasi, that he brings like a lay person. So then I would have thought the same thing is true with regards to the Kohen Gadol. So just like by the Nasi, once he is removed from his position, he is a Hedjot. I would have thought the same should be applicable to the Kohen Gadol. And that's why it brings you that case by the Kohen Gadol. Rashi says he favors the first Lashon. So in both cases, the linchpin here is the case where the Melech is already deposed or removed from being a Melech and sins, he's treated like a layperson. The question is, what would you infer from that? So in the first Lashon, you would have inferred maybe even the Nasi. In the first scenario, where he was the Nasi and then removed, that he should also bring like a Hedjot. Kamash Malan, that's not the case. Well, once it had to bring the Nasi as parallel structure, it also brought the Par case of the Kohen Mashiach, even though that case was obvious. In the second Lashon, you say that after the king is removed and he sins, he's treated like a Hedjot, you would have thought to apply that to the Kohen Gadol as well. The Kohen Gadol, after he is removed from his position, you would have thought he'd be treated like a Hedjot. Kamash Malan, that it teaches you that even after he's removed from his position, he's treated like a Kohen Gadol. So that's the Chiddush of that piece, and that piece was brought to dispel what you would have thought extrapolating from the Melech. And once it brought that piece, even though then the first scenario becomes unnecessary, nevertheless, it's brought anyway because of the fact that you need the second piece to teach you the Chiddush because of what you might have thought from the Nasi that was removed from his position. In either case, what really ends up happening is that it dispels what you might have thought from extrapolating from a king who was removed from his position. And in the end, you have a parallel structure, and therefore brings you both dinim, even though there may not be a chidush in the din of the fact that a Kohen Gadol who sinned while he was a Kohen Gadol is bringing the Korban afterwards is treated like a Kohen Gadol. Now the Gemara asks, Menane Mile, how do we know that this is the case? Why is the din of the Melech and the din of the Kohen Gadol different? As well as why is it that when they were the king, or they were the Kohen Gadol and sinned, and then afterwards are bringing the Korban, that they still bring that Korban that is relevant to them? Because the Torah Bedan, it says by the Kohen Gadol, Im Kohen HaMashiach Yechtal HaShmatam, Bikriv HaChatato Asher Chata, Par Ben Bekar Tamim L'Shem Chatat. Bikriv HaChatato Melameid, Shemivi Chatato Mishavar. That even after he has moved on, there's a generic statement that he brings a chatat on any chait that he does. Because the pasuk begins, Im HaKohen HaMashiach Yechta LaShmatam, Vikriv al chatato asher chata is unnecessary language. It could just have written Vikriv par ben bekar tamim l'shem lechatat. What does it mean al chatato asher chata? Over the sin that he has sinned comes to teach you that additional lashon comes to teach you that even when he's no longer the Kohen Mashiach, that chait is still subject to the par Kohen Mashiach. Shiachol, I might have thought alodinu Isn't it a kal vachomer? Uma nasi shemivi b'shigiyat maseh. Eimi vichatato mishavar. A king who is chayav, even just for did something wrong unintentionally, he brings a korban, and which also makes him less differentiated from the regular layperson's case of shigaga. Because shigat maseh is the same way that a hedyot is in violation, it's the same way that nasi is in violation. Nevertheless, after he's deposed, after he's the king, he is treated like a layperson, Mashiach, shame be b'shigat maseh, el helem davar im shigat maseh, a kohen gadol who has a higher standard, which he needs an erroneous psak, and then a mistaken action unintentionally taken based on that psak, so he has a higher threshold, lo kol shekein, then wouldn't it be certain that he shouldn't have to bring it after he's already removed from being the Kohen Gadol? Tamalomar v'chriv al chatato, that he brings on his chet asher chata, lameid shemivi al chatato, misha avar, that he brings a korban even after he's been removed from being the Kohen Gadol. V'naiti nami nasi v'ka v'chomer. So now let's reverse the logic and say, now that we know that the Kohen Gadol brings it after he's been removed, let's say the same thing for the Nasi or the Melech as a Kamachomer. Ma Mashiach Shemivi B'Shigat Maseh, Kohen Gadol, who does not bring when he's a simply an unintentional violation, then Mivi Chatat Misha Avar. Nevertheless, after he's already been removed, he still brings a Korban. Nasi Shemivi Chatat B'Shigat Maseh, the king who brings it simply for an unintentional violation, Enu Din Shemivi Chatato Misha Avar. And certainly, he should have to bring his chatat once he is removed. Tamalomar, Ashir Nasi Yecheta. The Nasi, when he sins. Kishu Nasi in, Kishu Ejot, lo. When he is the king, then he brings it. And when he's not the king, when he's a layperson, he doesn't bring it. So here, Im Kohen HaMashiach Yechta Lashmatam, Bikriva Chatato Asher Chata. There's a generic statement that he brings a chatat on any chait that he does, and seems to be independent or irrespective of the fact that he is the Kohen Mashiach. That means once he was a Kohen Mashiach and he sins, then he'll always bring a chatat on the chait that he does, irrespective of whether he is still the Kohen Mashiach. On the other hand, the beginning of the parsha of the Nasi is Asher Nasi Yecheta. The chait has to be associated with him being a Nasi, and therefore that is the only time he'll bring it. The qualification is he must be the Nasi in order to bring it. Based on that difference, it results in the different halacha, which is a Kohen Mashiach that is already not the Kohen Gadol, brings a korban like he is the Kohen Mashiach. A melech, who's no longer the melech, brings it like he is a layperson and not like the melech. Mix Mishnah. Chatu ad shelo nitmenu. So this is your question. If they sinned before they were appointed to their positions, v'akakach nitmenu, and then afterwards they are appointed, harielu kehedjotot, they have it treated like hedjotot. So the way that this Mishnah reads, in conjunction with the previous Mishnah, it has to do with when you sinned. In the previous Mishnah, if you sinned while you were the Kohen Gadol, you sinned while you were the Melech, then you bring a Korban like the Kohen Gadol, you bring a Korban like the Melech. In this case, it'll be just the opposite. They both sinned while they were still labor people, before they were appointed to their positions. And therefore, their Korban will be reflective of when they sinned, which is that they were hedjotot. So in this case, in the conjunction with the previous Mishnah, you see that it's the chait that is gorein. Whenever the person sinned, that is what determines which korban they bring. They sin while they're hedjotot, they are like hedjotot. They sin when they're in that position of power, they have the korban like that position of power. Rabbi Shimon Omer, im noda lahem, achlo nitmanu, if they were informed about the sin before they were appointed to the position, chayavim, mi shenitmanu, turim. But if they only find out about it after they're appointed, then they are patur. What Rabbi Shimon says, and we saw this actually earlier in the Gemara, is that you need both. You need both the sin and the yediyah to take place in one category. That means that if they sinned as hedjotot, and they found out of it while they were hedjotot, then they bring a korban as a hedjot. On the other hand, if you have some bifurcation between the two, which means that you have the sin take place while they're hedjot, and they're only informed about it when they're either a Kohen Gadol or a Melech, they bring nothing. Because he requires that both the Chet and the Yediyah be in the same category. Now, that means he also argues on the previous Mishnah. The previous Mishnah said if they sinned while they were the Kohen Gadol, or they sinned while they were the Nasi, they bring the Korban that is relevant to that category. That's true to the Chachamim who say that the sin is what determines, the Chet is what determines. According to Rabbi Shimon who says you need Chet and Yediyah in the same category, then only if they were informed about the matter before they were deposed would they bring such a Korban. If they were only informed about the matter after they were deposed, then he would also disagree in that case as well. That means if they sinned while he was the king, and then only found out about it after he was removed from being the king, in that case, according to Rabbi Shimon, he would not bring a Korban. Although, that by the case of the Kohen Gadol, he might not disagree, because the din of the Kohen Gadol is the same while he is the Kohen Gadol, and after he's the Kohen Gadol. Once he's the Kohen Gadol, he's always, in a sense, the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Mashiach. Given that, even if he had a Yediyah after he was removed from being the Kohen Gadol, according to Rabbi Shimon, he would likely bring the Korban of the Par Kohen Mashiach. Ezehu Nasi Zemelech. So this is, again, something we've taken for granted all the way along. I've said it over and over again, that when the Torah mentions the word Nasi, it's read as synonymous with king. Here the Mishnah tells you, Nasi is the king, Shenemar. It says, Asher Nasi Echtav Asach Achat Mikol Mitzvot Hashem Elukav, Shalo Tasena Bishkagav Hashem, She'en Agabav Elu Hashem Elukav. What does it mean, Kol Mitzvot Hashem Elukav? With the remaining Korbanot, it says Mitzvot Hashem. But it never doesn't say Mitzvot Hashem Elukav, his God. What does it mean? It's the king's God, his personal God. No, it means the one who only has God above him. There's only one person in Klal Yisrael who is in such a position where of authority, where he's so high up, that there's nobody above him except God. And that is the king. And that's the reference over here, Mikol Mitzvot Hashem Elukav, that there's no one above him, and that's a reference to the king. Minahani Mile. Where do we know this? The Tan Rabbanan. Im HaKohen HaMashiach Yecheta. How do you know that if he sinned before becoming the Kohen Gadol, that once he becomes the Kohen Gadol, it does not carry over? Because it says, Im HaKohen HaMashiach Yecheta. Prat, the Kodmot. While he is the Kohen Mashiach, he sins. That's when he brings this Korban. That excludes something that happened prior to that. In that anything that happened prior to him being the Kohen Gadol, it's not relevant because he has to be Yecheta when he was the Kohen Mashiach. Halo Dinu. Isn't it a Kavachomer? Ma Nasi Shmevi Bishkigat Maseh. When it comes to the Nasi, the Melech, when he simply violates something unintentionally, Ein Mevi Alakodmot, he doesn't bring four things happened prior to his being the king. Mashiach, Shemevi Alahelem Davarim Shigat Maseh, Inu Din Shlo Yavi Alakodmot, then certainly the Kohen Gadol, who needs or requires both an erroneous psak, as well as then acting on that psak in order to be chayav, then certainly he should not be chayav for sins that took place before his appointment as the Kohen Gadol. Or says, lo, that kal v'chomer can be broken up. Im amart b'nasi shekein eni mevi chatato misha avar. The nasi has a kula associated with him. He has a chomra that he's chayav for shekiyat maseh, but he has a kula that after he is deposed, he no longer brings the korban like a melech. He brings it like a hejot. Tomar b'mashiach shemevi chatato misha avar. On the other hand, the Kohen Gadol has that Chumrah, that even after he's removed from being the Kohen Gadol, he still brings the Korban of the Kohen Gadol. Ho mevi chatato mishavar, yavi ala kodmot. Given that he brings the Korban even after he's removed, maybe he should also bring the Korban if it happened even prior to his appointment. So Talmud Omar, HaMashiach Yecheta. Chata Kishu Mashiach, he sins when he was the Kohen Gadol. Mevi, then you bring Kara Kohen Mashiach. Kishu Ejot. If he was a lay person when he sinned, enu mevi. In that case, you do not bring it. Betanya nami gabe nasi. We have a similar type of braita with regards to the melech. Ki agavno, similar to the structure that we just spoke about. Asher nasi yecheta. That when the nasi sins, prat likodmot. To exclude things that happened prior to his appointment as the nasi. Only when he sins as the nasi, as the melech, does he bring such a korban. Hello, Dinu. And again, shouldn't it be a Kavachomer? The Kohen Gadol, who after his removal from the Kohanah Gedola, still brings a Korban Mashiach, he does not bring four things that happened prior to being the Kohen Gadol. Nasi, the king who does not bring a Korban after he's already deposed, certainly he shouldn't bring on those that took place prior to his appointment. Mala Mashiach, Shekein Eimei Vim Shigat Maseh, wait a minute, the Kohen Gadol also has a kula, which is that if it's just an unintentional violation, he does not bring a korban. Tomar, the nasid shmei vibi shigat maseh, there's a chumrah by the nasid that he brings even over a simple unintentional violation. So therefore, there's a chumrah here. Hoil umevi b'shigat maseh yevi'ala kodmot. Since he brings a korban, even with just an unintentional violation, then maybe he should also have to bring for things that took place prior to his appointment. Tamalomar she'er nasi yecheta, shechata varehu nasi. The nasi who sins, means that when he sins while he is the nasi, not a case where he sins when he's still a layperson. So what you see from here is that there's a kula and chumra in each of the parties, and because of that kula and chumra, you might have thought to extrapolate from one to the other, but given that it's not a clear kal v'chomer, because the nasi has a kula that he doesn't bring post his status as the melech, and he has a chumra, which is he brings on Shigat Maaseh. Kohen Gadol has a chumra that he brings even post his status as Kohen Gadol, but he also has a kula, which he only brings on Helam Dabar and Shigat Maaseh. Given that, you can't learn one from the other, and you need a limud in each of the cases to teach you the din, that there is no din of melech prior to being a melech, no din of Kohen Gadol prior to being a Kohen Gadol. If he sins while he's a lay person prior to that, they will not bring the korban that is associated with their new position. Tan Rabbanan, asher nasi yecheta, yechol gzeira. You would think that it is ordained from the heavens that he must sin. It says, asher nasi yecheta, that the nasi will sin. Tamalomar, im hakoen amashiach yecheta. It says, if the Kohen Gadol sins. So there's a difference in the Lashon. In the case of the Kohen Gadol, it says, if he does sin. By the nasi, it says, asher nasi yecheta, when he sins. Sounds like it is a heavenly ordained thing that he will sin. Malahalan kishiyechta avkan lishiyechta. So the correlation between the Kohen Gadol and the Nasi tells you that the parshioti are speaking about when someone sins, if someone sins, not that they will sin. Amarmar, yechol gzeira. So the Braita says that you would have thought it was heavenly ordained. Gzeira mehechetete. Where do you ever find such a thing that there's a heavenly ordained decree that you must sin? Doesn't make any sense. Amrayin? Yes, we do. Ashkachan, we found it in another place. Dichtiv. Benatati negat sarat bebeit eretz achuzetchem. This week's parsha. The Torah says that I'm going to put negaim in the houses of your possession. Bisorah ilahem. This is news, information that's being disclosed to them. Shnegaim bayim alehem, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that the negaim, that the tzarat is going to happen. It's a given that there is going to be tzarat on the houses that they entered into in Eretz Yisrael. The ones that are tamei are only ones that come for cause or reason, not the ones that come because of some extraneous factor, which we'll discuss in a minute, what that exogenous variable is. This is not mentioned here, but we know that the Midrash brings, it's actually a benefit to the Jew, because when the Jews were entering into Eretz Yisrael, the Kananim hid all of this wealth in their walls, in their places where they would not be discovered. The Jew then, after he conquers the area and takes over the house, he doesn't know to look for it. He's not going to knock down the walls to find it because he has a ready-made house. So then along come the Negaim and force him to break the wall, take out the stones, and all of a sudden he finds the Matmoniot. So there you can see maybe there's some good that comes from it. And Tosfot HaRosh, for that reason, says that they're not exactly parallel. Because that news about the Torah predicting that something bad like this is going to happen has a good side to it. Or even on a more metaphysical level, the Ramban sees that the Negaim, as he explains in the beginning of the Parshat Tazria, are really a manifestation of Hashem's Hashkacha over Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. It is about their special relationship that Hashem indicates quickly when someone is misbehaving, when someone is doing something wrong. So here, the punishment is really an indication of that strong relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and B'nai Yisrael. So the cases aren't exactly parallel, but conceptually, the idea that the Torah does predict negative events in its statement, even though we know that there is Bechira Chofshit, nevertheless, the Torah in some instances says that this will happen irrespective of the fact that there is Bechira Chofshit. That is because there might be something overwhelming that pushes a person towards that precipice, and that is that the king in his position of power many times is drawn into sin because of that position of power. And similarly, when people get comfortable in their houses, when people settle in, there's also the concept that people then begin to be mivayet, kick off a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's both the reason for us to go to the Sukkah to remind ourselves of the temporariness of life and the temporariness of our sojourn here in Olam Hazeh, as well as the psukim and dvarim that speak about when a person gathers wealth and is settled and comfortable, that he tends to kick off Hashem. So there is a higher correlation with these types of issues, like being the king and like having a house and settling down permanently, that do cause a person to sin. But there you see from both of these cases that there is such a concept where the Torah indicates or predicts that something bad will happen despite the fact that there is Bechira Chofshi. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Besorah, Hashem is informing them there will be Nigei Batim, not saying to them if there are Nigei Batim, but there will be Nigei Batim. Hakanami Ema Gzeirahi. So too in our case, it is a Gzeirah. Hilkach Tiv, and therefore we have the Pasuk by the Kohen Mashiach that says Im, to teach you that if it is not heavenly ordained, the king may sin, but he doesn't have to sin. And therefore, it really means if he sins, then this is the procedure that he must follow. But if not, that is a gzeirah that he must sin. Other Rabbi Shimon, nigei onsim, milo metamu? Is it really true that nigein that come because of these exogenous reasons, they don't bring about tuma? Vatanya, don't we have a braita? Adam kiyem, when it comes to the pasuk that begins negatzarat, it says Adam kiyem be'or besaro, that when an individual on his skin, on his flesh, has a nega, mina dibur velech, it is only from that moment going forward, which means from the command of Nigayim, there to forward, someone who has a nega will be tameh. But if his nega was there before the command came about, before the Torah was given and it was spoken about Nigayim, then it would not be tameh. Balo dinu, isn't it a kal v'chomer? Timei bezav, v'timei b'nigayim. The Torah in this week's parsha deals with both Nigayim and Zav, Tumat Zav. Ma Zav min ha-dibor ve'lech, af Nigayim min ha-dibor ve'lech. Just like by the Zav, it says the same thing, which is, from the moment of the command forward, if a person has a sighting of Zav, he will be Tamei. If he had the sighting prior to his becoming, prior to the Dibor or the Tzivoy, he would not be Tamei. So then, why don't you say the same thing by Nigayim? Why do you need a separate limud by Nigayim? You could have extrapolated it from the Zav. So lo yim amart. No, there is a difference. This is similar to what we did with the Kohen Gadol and Nasi. There's a kula and a chumra, which is bzav shekein ein mitamei bonus. When it comes to a zav, he does not become tamei if he has a sighting that is not driven by the fact that he is a zav. He's not having a zav emission. There, the Mishnah gives different reasons why a person might have an emission that's not associated with ziva. And has all sorts of precipitating factors that can cause that. Tomar v'nigayim shemitamim bonus. But that's not true by nigayim. Nigayim, even if they happen without any premeditation or any cause and effect, they still are mitameh. So here you have a distinction between them. But most importantly, we're saying that nigayim bonus are mitameh. That goes against what Rabbi Shimon said. Tamalomar adam kiyeh. So that's why you have a separate limud by nigayim to teach you mina dibor velech. That only after the Torah was given are Nigayim and Tameh. If they exist or pre-existed the command, then you have a dispensation for pre-existing conditions. That's both by Zav and Nigayim. If they're a pre-existing condition, they are not Tameh. So how do you explain or reconcile between this Braita and Rabbi Shimon's statement? Rav Amar Prat L'Nigay Ruchot. Rav Amar Prat L'Nigay Kshafim. When Rabbi Shimon says they're not Mitameh, that's speaking about Nigay Ruchot, the way Rashi describes it is, as some demon came and put the Nigayim there, caused the Nigayim to be there. And Rav Papa says that it was done through sorcery. Either of those two sources are considered to be unseen or not mitamei. They're not considered to be real Nigayim. But other Nigayim that come about, irrespective of their cause, they are mitamei, even if they are beones. It's just if they are placed there by some variable or exogenous variable, like Shafim or like Shedim, then they are not mitameh. And so these are onasim that are created by exogenous variables, like ruach ra'a, or like shafim, as opposed to ones that comes from adam, where a person gets burnt, a person gets an injury, that is a self-inflicted or inflicted by another individual, in an uncontrollable circumstance, but it's not something that is brought upon them by some exogenous variable like this ruach raha or kshafim. And even though the Gemara here is quoting something from Nigei B'nei Adam, and why is that relevant to Nigei Batim? Rashi answers that problem of saying, just like the din is such by Nigei B'nei Adam, so too that is true by Nigei Batim. But if you look at the Tosfot Rosh, he brings from the Ramah that he thinks that there is no such concept of zone seen by Batim, and that it's a Me'enu Inyan, the Batim, it must be speaking about B'nei Adam. And within B'nei Adam, we do find this stira between one case where it seems to say that unseen are not mitameh, and another case where unseen are mitameh, and that's what the Gemara is trying to resolve. And then the answer in the end is that when it comes to Nigei Batim, there is a concept of unseen. When it comes to these exogenous variables like Shafim and Rukhot, and then that way you could separate between the issues and say that the statement of Rabbi Shimon is by Nigei Batim, and the question that's brought from the Bright is by Nigei B'nei Adam. And by Nigei B'nei Adam, there's no such thing as onus. He is Tameh all the time. Whereas by the case of Nigei Batim, there is a concept of onus, and that is by Kishafim and Ruchot. Tan Rabbanan, Asher Nasi Yecheta, Prat Lechole, Mishom Tava Lechole, Idchele Minisute. Wait a minute. Because he's sick, he's then deposed, removed from being the king. Just because he's sick, he's no longer the king. Maravdim Ibrahama, Prat Lenasi Shinitzdara. Now, it's not coming to teach you that a nasi is not considered to be a nasi when he gets sick. The sickness we're speaking about here is the spiritual sickness, is the sickness of Torah. That means to exclude a nasi who became infected with Torah, that he is no longer considered to be the king, or he is deposed from being the king. And as Rashi points out, this is not like Rabbi Yossi HaGlili before, who clearly said that a nasi remains a nasi because his wealth stays with him. That is Rashi the Shitato, that the answer in the Gemara yesterday was that the wealth of the Nasi extends beyond his Nisiut, and therefore he is considered or classified like a Nasi even after he's removed from that position. This Gemara is clearly not like that position of Yossi HaGlili according to Rashi. Although the Tosfot Rosh brings from the Ramah once again that he doesn't think that Rashi's statement here is correct, because over there it's speaking about the Korban Olevi Oreid and the exemption of the Nasi from having to bring a Korban Olevi Oreid. Over here, it's speaking about the Nasi'ir of the Nasi. So it's possible that he is classified as a Nasi, the Gabay Olevi Oreid, but he's not classified as a Nasi with regards to the Seir. And therefore, even after he's been deposed as the king, he won't bring a Korban Olevi Oreid, but he still will not bring the Korban of a Nasi, because he isn't a Nasi anymore, and therefore, the qualifications or the limud are different. Over there, it's an issue of wealth. Over here, it's an issue of position. So by the case of wealth, that stays with him and he's exempt. Over here it's an issue of his position, and his position has been removed. Shenamar, because it says, Ve'inaga Hashem et ha-melech, that Hashem plagued the king with Tzarat. This is the story of Uzziah, who decides that it's not enough that he's the king. He also wants to be the Kohen Gadol. He brings a Ktoret into the Beit HaMikdash. On his way in to bring the Ktoret, he breaks out in Tzarat. As soon as he breaks out with Tzarat, he stops. And they throw him out of the Mikdash. He remained a Mitzora until the day of his death. He lived in the interim in the Beit HaChofshit. Yotam ben HaMelech, Yotam the son of the king, Alabayit, takes over for his father's rule. Chazal in other places compliment Yotam in the fact that he took over as the king, but he still did everything in his father's name. His father was still alive. Generally, when you have a passing of the kingship, the previous king passes away, and then the new king is appointed or anointed, and he has full power, he assumes the full power of the king. Over here, he was, quote-unquote, the acting king. Technically, he was the king because his father was removed because of the Tzarat. Nevertheless, out of respect for his father, you can see here the puzzle says, Al Habayit, that he dealt with the house, he dealt with the royal issues for his father on behalf of his father, and that means that he was the acting king, but not full-powered king. And Chazal compliment his deference to his father in this case. Midikamar bebeit ha-chofshit. What does it mean that he was in the free house? Michlal dad hashta evid havel. That is to indicate that until now, he was subservient. Kia, the Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua. And here, the Gemara is going to make a story showing you that the person who is in power is actually subservient and not really the one who is on top. Because he becomes then a public servant. He's now obligated to serve the public. That makes him an eved to the whims and will and demands of the public at large. And so therefore, even though you're assuming a position of power, it's not really as powerful as you think, because you have a servitude to the public at large. There is a demand or an obligation on the king or the person in power to take care of his subjects. Kiyadu Rabbi Gamliel Rabbi Yeshua, similar to the case of Rabbi Gamliel Rabbi Yeshua, but Azle Bisfinoto, they were traveling on a boat. Bahadi Rabbi Gamliel Avapito, Rabbi Gamliel brought bread for the trip to hold them over during that trip. Bahadi Rabbi Yeshua Avapito Vesulta, Rabbi Yeshua on the other hand brought both bread and flour. Shalom Pite de Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel's bread ran out because the trip took longer than they thought. Samachasute de Rabbi Yeshua. So he borrowed flour, or he relied on Rabbi Yeshua's flour to have more bread or what to eat. Bread has only a certain amount of shelf life. So you can bring bread, but after a certain point in time, bread's no longer useful to you. If you need something for a longer duration, you need to bring flour that you can make into bread. Amalei, miyabi yadat, avalani kuva kuli hai. So Rabbi Gamliel was shocked that Rabbi Yeshua brought flour. Why did he bring flour if they knew that the journey was of a limited scope or duration and bread would have sufficed? What possessed him to also bring flour? How did he know that the boat was going to get lost? There is this star that comes up every 70 years and it causes the sailors to be confused. Maybe it will rise during our trip, and it will confuse the sailors, and therefore will get lost. Rashi describes the process by which sailors use stars as their benchmark. So they use, the northern star. They look up in the sky, they look at the northern star, and then they say, okay, I want to be going east, west, north, south, and I benchmark that against the northern star. So every time you look in the sky, he looks for the north star and says, where am I relative to that star? How is my boat facing relative to that star? If I've moved, then he readjusts the boat. But this star moves through the sky. It's not stationary in the sky. Rashi said sometimes comes up in the south, sometimes up in the north. Truth is, it could be moving through the sky. And if he benchmarked against that star, then he's going to be confused because he's going to see it in different parts of the sky. It's going to be adjusting the boat, but incorrectly, because the benchmark is not stationary. It is moving. Many speculate here that this is a reference to a comet, to Halley's Comet, which rises once every 75 years, which is pretty close to what Rabbi Yeshua suggests over here of 70 years. So many indicate that it was that comet that he was referring to. And that's what confused the sailors. I'm just going to quote you here. In the Cincino, he has a footnote about this with regards to the Halley's Comet, and he says, the star with which Rabbi Yeshua was acquainted has been identified as Halley's Comet, whose periodic time is about 75 years. On the other hand, Brodetsky Z disputes the view, since one of the periodic returns of Halley's Comet was in the year 66. That was one of the sightings. If you go back in time, you just calculate when it would have appeared. It would have appeared in the year 66, whereas the journey of Rabbi Gamliel to Rome was in the year 95. Remember, they are the Chachamim in Yavna. They're post the Korban HaBayit. They're not pre the Korban HaBayit. And therefore, there is too big a gap between them. It remains nevertheless remarkable that the periodic time of at least one comet was known to Rabbi Yeshua in the second century, about 1,500 years before the phenomenon became known even to the most civilized nations. So he's saying that it's unbelievable that Rabbi Yeshua even understood that or realized that there was such a concept. Even if you say it wasn't Halley's Comet, he was familiar with some comet and understood that it cycled and that it wasn't coming all the time. And he says that's pretty amazing that Rabbi Yeshua has that information, despite the fact that comets and this concept will not be discovered or focused on for another 1,500 years. So Amarle, so Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Yeshua, Kokach v'yadcha v'ata oleh b'spina, what are you doing in business over here? Now Rabbi Yeshua is going out to earn a living. That's why he's on the boat. When Gamliel is the Nasi, he's traveling to Rome because he has to deal with political issues. But Rabbi Yeshua is on the boat because he's going to do business and get a parnosa. So Rabbi Gamliel says to him, you're so smart. You're such a chokham. What are you doing on the boat getting business? You should be able to make a living just being at home with that knowledge, whether he is going to be a consultant or whether he was a Talmud chokham and he was going to be appointed one of the leadership rabbanim. And that should have been sufficient. Why are you out there trying to make a living? Amalei, achata tamalai, tama ashne tamidim, shesh bechabi yabisha. So Yeshua says, before you wonder about me, you should wonder about two of your Talmidim that are back home, that are Rabbi Lazar Chisma, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda, these two Chachamim, Tanaim, Shiodim l'she'er kama tipot yesh bayam, they're able to estimate how many drops of water there are in the yam, meaning they're able to make this volumetric estimation of how much water there is in the sea, and then pad lechol v'lo beged l'lbosh, and they don't have any bread to eat, and they don't even have clothes to wear. Natadato lo shivam berosh. Rabbi Gamliel marked in his little book a reminder that when he got back home, he would take care of them. He would actually appoint them to positions of power that would grant them either a salary because of their position of power, or because they would be the rabbanim, people would then give them gifts and provide for them because they would be in leadership roles. Although, once again here, the Rama, quoting the Tosfot HaRosh, disagrees with Rashi's interpretation, and says, first of all, people who are on boats doing business are usually wealthy and not poor, because it takes a large investment to do such shipping and moving of items from place to place. In addition, just because you're smart, just because a person has wisdom, doesn't mean that they're going to be wealthy. Rather, he questions if Rabbi Yeshua was so wise to know that there was a possibility of danger on this trip, why did he engage in this trip? Why did he go on this trip to start with? Although the response of Rabbi Yeshua over here seems to align more along the lines of the way that Rashi explained it, it has to do with Parnassa, because of his then indication about the other Chachamim who need Parnassa. Now, what's interesting here is that this is very parallel to the Gemara that is mentioned both in Masechet Brachot as well as in Masechet Rosh Hashanah with regards to the altercations that happened between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, which eventually leads to Rabbi Gamliel being deposed as the Nasi, and the quote that we have in the Haggadah, which is the appointment of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, where he says that, I'm only 18 years old, but now I have some gray hairs. Hare ani keben shivim shana, I look like I'm 70. In that story there, where Rabbi Gamliel, in a number of cases, mistreated Rabbi Yeshua, which then leads to the Chachamim deposing of Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel later on goes to visit Rabbi Yeshua, and in his visit to Rabbi Yeshua, he sees that he is a pachman, worker with coal, and that his house and the walls of his house are all black. And Rabbi Gamliel looks at him and says, what is this? Why are the walls of your house black? What's going on here? And Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Gamliel, you really don't understand what the life of the lay people are like. You're a nasi, you are in a position of political authority where you both have much wealth and stature, and therefore you don't really understand the plight of the common folk. And here, it's interesting that he's looking to Rabbi Yeshua, not understanding, again, what is he doing out there with doing business when he's so bright. And then Rabbi Yeshua draws his attention to two people who are even in a worse position than Rabbi Yeshua. It's clear what Rabbi Yeshua is saying to Rabbi Gamliel, and again, this is repeated in that story or that incident, Rabbi Gamliel, you're out of touch with the common folk. You're out of touch with the people who are suffering, are completely impoverished with their learning, and you don't really understand what's happening. You need to pay more attention to the common folk. And so here he too points out two Talmidei Chachamim who are impoverished, and yet they're tremendous Chachamim. Shala, when Rabbi Gamliel returned home, Shalach lahem v'lo bo. He asked for them to come to visit him, and they refused to come. They got wind of the fact that he wanted to point them to positions of power, and they were anavim, and they didn't want to take these positions of power. Chazar v'shalach, he requested their presence again, ubo, and then they came. Amalem kimidumim atem shisrara ani yitain lachem. You think you're getting something good here? You think you're getting a position of power? That's why you were anavim and didn't want to accept my first request and refused my request. Abdut ani yitain lachem. I'm giving you a servitude now, not a position of power. And Rashi says here what he said before when we mentioned the same thing, which is, shasrarut, avdut hu lo, position of power, it really is a position of servitude. Lehifish, mutal alav, ol harabim, because the yoke of the public at large is now upon you. You need to service the people. You need to deal with the people. You need to acknowledge the needs of the people, which ironically is what Rabbi Yeshua was trying to point out to Rabbi Gamliel, that you need to be more in touch with the people. And here Rabbi Gamliel is telling them that don't think this is such a great thing. because power leads not just to authority and the opportunity to be funded and parnosa, but it also leads to a certain amount of servitude, where your life is now dedicated to the public at large. You become a public servant. That's also what we read in last week's parasha with regards to Parshat Shmini. When Aaron loses his two sons, Hashem says, you're not allowed to mourn them. You're not allowed to leave your position as the Kohen Gadol. The party must go on. Yom HaShmini will continue, and you may not leave the Mishkan. The reason being is because Aaron, as the Kohen Gadol, is in service of the public. He has a position whereby his position supersedes his personal needs, and therefore he has to continue doing the Avodah in the Mikdash, despite the personal tragedy that he's just suffered. He can't focus on his personal needs or his personal emotions. He needs to continue to serve as the Kohen Gadol. And so a similar concept that is being said over here. Shnemar, by Debru Elav Lemor, Imayom Tia Eved La'amazeh. So when the people are beseeching Rehoboam to reduce the tax burden that his father Shlomo HaMelech had put on them, he seeks advice of the Zekinim that were in the time of Shlomo, and the Tzirim who were his friends. And the Zekinim tell him that he should reduce the taxes, and they said the following, by Debru Elav Lemor, Imayom Tia Eved La'amazeh. If today you become a servant to the people, and if you respond to them in a favorable manner, in a nice way, then they will be your subjects for the remainder of your life. Meaning that if you subordinate yourself to the wishes of the people here, then you will remain the king and they will be loyal subjects to you. But you see, conceptually what they're telling him is that you need to be a servant of the people. And in that way, you have to acquiesce to the requests of the people, and the request is reasonable, and therefore your favorable response to their request will be positive for you. But more importantly, it shows that the king, in essence, is an eved to the people, as opposed to the advice that he receives from the tzirim, which is, you should tax them more, and that you should pressure them more, and you should assert your power. And Rehoboam, in the end, takes the advice of the young people, and ends up responding negatively to the request of the people, and that's the cause for the Pilucha Melucha, for the splitting of the Melucha between the northern kingdom and the kingdom of Yehuda. Tan Rabbanan, Asher Nasi Yecheta, Am Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Ashrei Hador, Shenasi Shelo Mevi Kurban Al Shigigato. Praiseworthy, lucky is the generation in which its king brings a Kurban over his unintentional violations. He's darshing the word Asher to mean Ashrei. And so therefore, he sees it as being a positive statement about the king's submission before God, that he worries about a sin that he did unintentionally, and he brings a korban. Im nasisha lo mevi korban, tzricha talomar ma'u hajot. If the king brings a korban, then certainly the lay people bring a korban. Now this goes back to what you said before, that the king is in a position of power. That authority and that power makes him more likely to sin, because he thinks that there's no one watching over him. There's no one that he is subservient to. In his position of power, and we find that with many politicians, that they think that they're above the law because they are so powerful, because they wield so much power. They think that the law is not applicable to them, and therefore they have many sins that involve the abuse of their power or corruption of their power. And history of the world is replete with that. And in the modern day, it happens all the time. So here, if the king himself, who's in that position where the sin is almost a given because of his position of power, and if he still is worried about his sins and brings a korban, then certainly the lay people of that generation are going to worry about their sins and bring korbanot. The fact that the king is submissive before Hashem and brings korbanot for his sins, then all chat kama kama, certainly the lay people of that generation will be careful about their sins and bring korbanot. V'imal shigato mevi korban. And even with an unintentional violation, he brings a korban. If he intentionally does something wrong, then certainly he'll do tshuva, and certainly he will try to rectify the wrong that he has done. You see here, through the bringing of the korban of the shogeg for the nasi, is an indication of the religious temperament of his kingdom, as well as his personal desire to serve Hashem properly and not to sin, which influences both the people as a whole, as well as his behavior when he does something wrong. So Rava Brei D'Rabba asks him, "Elamiata dechtiv, what are you going to do with these other psukim that also have the word asher in them? You're telling me now that the word asher is indicative of a statement of ashrei, then what are you going to say to this pasuk? Ve'et asher chata min hakodesh yishalem. Someone who does sins, misappropriates hekdesh, has to pay, meaning that this is the asham mi'ilot. I'm going to say praiseworthy is the one who brings a korban for misappropriating hekdesh, over Yerovam ben Nevat, and even more pronounced, when it comes to Yerovam, dechtibe asher chata v'asher hechti, that he sinned, and he caused others to sin. You're going to say, asher means ashrei, hachanami da ashrei ador, who? Now you're going to say, praiseworthy or lucky is the generation that has this. Mar says, no, you misunderstood the drasha. Shani ocha, it's different here, the shani kara b'dibure, that the Torah uses a different language. With regards to the Kohen Gadol, it says, im. With regards to the Parlam Davar Seol Tzibor, it says, im. With regards to the Chatari Yachid, it says, im. Only by the Nasi does it say, asher. That change in language is what precipitates the drasha. It's not the fact that it says asher. It's asher in a context where every other case it uses the word im. So there, when you change from im to asher, that teaches you this drasha of ashrei. Darash Rav Nachman Baruch Chisda, my dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk in Kohelet? Ish hevel asher naseh al aretz. There is something terrible, an emptiness that happens in the world. The pasuk gives you what that emptiness is. Yesh hevel asher naseh al aretz, asher yesh tzadikim, asher magi aleyem kimaseh arishayim, v'yesh rishayim shemagi aleyem kimaseh tzadikim, amarti shegam zeh hevel. So the Gemara here is going to darshan the word asher, similar to the way we did before, which is ashrei, lucky or praiseworthy are the tzadikim, who get the maseh rishayim, and then instead of it saying ashrei or asher by the rishayim, it says v'yesh. And they're going to darshan that to mean vai, woe is to the rasha who gets the rewards of the maseh tzadikim, and that's what the Gemara is about to explain here in other words, meaning that it doesn't quote the pasuk directly, but thematically it's along the lines of what the Gemara explains now, which is ashreim letzadikim shemigi alehem ki maseh rishayim sholam haba, lucky or praiseworthy are the tzadikim, that their lot in this world is like the maseh rishayim, like the rishayim are going to get the olam haba. The olam hazeh, they get in this world. The punishment that's due to the Rishayim in olam haba, the tzaddikim suffer in this world. Because that helps them to remove all of their sins and cleanse them for the olam haba. So that is lucky are they. Oy lahem the Rishayim, woe to the Rishayim, shemigi alehem kemaseh tzaddikim, that they end up getting the rewards that the tzaddik will get olam haba, in olam haba, b'olam hazeh, in this world. So woe to the Rishayim whose fate in this world will be to be rewarded now, because Hashem then will wipe out all their rewards and then punish them fully in olam haba. So if they get that which the tzaddikim deserve in olam haba, they get in olam hazeh, they get all their reward in this world, woe is to them. And the Gemara says something that plagues anyone. Why is it so bad that a tzaddik should get rewards in this world and olam haba? Why does it have to be the tzaddik viralo? And that he has to have a bad lot in this world, and then only get his reward olam haba. Why can't a tzaddik get goodness in this world, and goodness to olam haba? And this might even be a more fundamental machloket as to what is a better life for the tzaddik. Is the tzaddik who suffers a better tzaddik, or is the tzaddik who lives a life of tranquility a better tzaddik? El amarova, this is the way to rephrase it, so that it makes more sense. Ashreim letzaddikim. Lucky, praiseworthy is the tzaddik who has a good life in this world, like what the rishayim get in this world. The rishayim in this world are given all their rewards, so they have nothing left to olam haba. Praiseworthy or lucky is the tzaddik who gets that reward in this world, meaning that he gets the same reward as the rishayim in this world, and he also gets olam haba, trei olamot. And woe to the rasha who has a bad lot in life in this world. And even though they're suffering in this world, it doesn't bring them to any corrective action. And therefore they suffer in this world, and they suffer in the world to come because they never rectify their ways. In that not only is he going to be punished, the olam haba, he's also going to be punished in this world. He gets the treatment of the tzaddikim in this world, who normally are punished to cleanse them of their sin. He also gets cleansed of his sin, olam hazeh. So he gets a double bad. He gets the bad in this world, and the bad olam haba. Woe to that rasha. Rav Papa, Rav Huna, Breid, Rav Yeshua, to the Kamei de Rava. So these two Amoraim came before Rava. Amar Lohu, he said to them, Ukimtun Masech Teplan, Do you know, have you reviewed this Masechta? O Masechta Plan? And this other Masechta? He's asking, did you learn this Masechta? Did you learn this Masechta? You know it well? I'm relaying. He said, yes. I Achritu Purta? Do you have some wealth, small amount of wealth? I'm relaying. The Zavnan Katina Da'ara. Because we purchased small plots of land which support us, and we have Parnosa, and we have Torah, Kari Alayu, Ashrem Letzadikim, Shemigelim, Kamaseh Rishayim, Shabalamazeh, Balamazeh. So he used the phraseology that he had garnered from Qohelet to describe their lives. Lucky are those, or praiseworthy are those Tzadikim, who get rewarded in this world, like the Rishayim get rewarded, plus they get Olam Haba. Here they have Parnosa, they have by means by which to live, plus they have all that they have done that will carry over to Olam Haba. And again, his standards, you can see, for what it meant to have a good life. You have a small parnasa, you have a way to live, and you're able to learn Torah, that's great. He wasn't looking for great wealth. He was just saying that they should have, Baruch Hashem, an easy life, or a sufficient parnasa to live their lives here. That's enough to make it that they're getting reward in this world and the world to come. Amar Rav Bachanan Rav Yochanan, my dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk, Yisharim Darchei Hashem, that the ways of God are just and righteous? It's a Tzadikim Yachubam, the righteous will walk those paths. Uposhlim Yikashlubam, and those that are sinners or violators will be tripped up or stumble on those ways. Mashal L'shnei Bnei Adam, this is a parable to two individuals, Shatzalu Pischehem, that roasted their Korban HaPesach, Echad HaChalo L'shum Mitzvah, one of them ate the Korban Pesach that night, L'shem Korban Pesach, V'chad HaChalo L'shem Achila Gasa. And the other one ate it in a manner that was unbefitting. The way Rashi writes it over here, which is very difficult, he writes it, L'Achila Gasa, Shalo L'shem Mitzvah. He did not eat it for the mitzvah, Ela Nitkavin L'chol L'shem Kinuach Suda. He just ate it as dessert in his meal. He didn't eat it for the purpose of the Korban HaPesach. Now, the Tosfot Arosh takes issue with that Rashi, because it says, isn't that the Ikar way you're supposed to eat the Korban HaPesach? You're supposed to eat the Korban HaPesach ala sova, once you're already satisfied, and eat it as a dessert. Eat it as a king's meal, which is that you even have this extra meat afterwards as a dessert. He says, Perushoenu muvan, debimai pasha, ibimashachal, bikuno su'uda, zoi ikar mitzvato. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. El Nir the Faresh, he says that the way to explain it is, Achila Gasaz, he eats it, when he was already satisfied so much that he gets no hana'a, gets no enjoyment out of the eating. Achila gasa, other places in Shas, means someone who overeats. Someone who eats beyond their normal capacity to eat. The one ate it for the purpose of the mitzvah, that is the tzaddik, the righteous, are following the ways of Hashem. Someone who is a posheya will be tripped up or stumble over them. Amalei Rish Lakish, Rasha Karitle, Nihidalo Avid Mitzvah Min Amuvchar, Pesach Miloka Achil. Alright, he didn't do the mitzvah in the best way possible, but he's still Yotze, the mitzvah of Pesach. This Achila Gasa, even though that's not the proper way to eat the Korban HaPesach, nevertheless, you still get a mitzvah. According to Rashi, even though he didn't eat it for the mitzvah of Pesach, he ate it for dessert, it still counts as the Korban HaPesach. According to the Tosfot Arosh, he had an achila gasa. Even though it's achila gasa, it's not an appropriate type of eating, you still consider eating, and therefore you yotze the Korban HaPesach. Now, the problem is that the Gemara in another place says that a person who eats an achila gasa, you're not yotze a Korban HaPesach. That the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Tosfot Arosh over here quotes it as well, reconciles by saying there are two types of achila gasa. There's an achila gasa where you're so full that you have no interest in eating. If you eat, it'll go down, you'll have it, you won't get any hana from it, but you still eat it. There's another achila gasa that you're so full that it's revolting to you to put in another ounce of food. If you eat again, you would disgorge all your food. You'd be so repulsed by that eating. That's an achila gasa. So that's the way they explain that an achila gasa that is repulsive in nature, you're not yotze in the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. An achila gasa where you eat it, even though you're not getting hana from the eating, but it's not repulsive to you, that type of achila, you will be yotze the Korban HaPesach. So before you reach that point of Achila Gasa, where you're going to be so repulsive that you're going to disgorge your food, that's when you're not yotze the Korban HaPesach. But any Achila Gasa before that point in time may not be considered the best type of Achila. It's not the appropriate way to eat the Korban HaPesach, but you're still yotze the mitzvah of Korban HaPesach. So why is that called Uposhim Yikash Lubam? Ela Mashal L'Shnei Bnei Adam, Zei Ishto V'Achoto, Imo B'Bayit, has his sister and his wife in the house. And another individual has his wife and his sister in the house. They come home at night, they go to sleep, and he goes to have relations with his wife. The one who does that and actually gets his wife, and the other one has his sister come to him instead of his wife. The one whose wife comes to him, he is the righteous one and goes down the path of the just. He tripped up in the same area. He says, midomit. You can't compare that. That's not what the pasuk means. Anan kamrina and chado derech. The pasuk says there's the same path that they took. Over here you have two cases, two different incidents. I mean that the situations are the same, but what happened is totally different. In one case he got his wife, the other case he got his sister. That's not the same path in which a tzaddik is successful and the rasha is ikashlubam. That's totally different paths. Ela mashal lalot ushnei benotav. It's the case of Lot and his two daughters. Hainshinit kavnu l'shem mitzvah. They whose intentions were pure or correct l'shem shemayim, tzaddikim yelchubam. They're considered to be tzaddikim going down that path. Who shinit kavein l'shem avera? He who intended to do it out of sin and not l'shem shemayim, poshlim yikashlubam. Two people are involved in the same act. One is doing l'shem shemayim and one is doing l'shem avera. Mar says, how do you know? We don't hear anything from Lot. Lot never speaks in the incident. The daughters speak and say, there's no one left in the world. We need to do something in order to continue the world. Let us sleep with our father. But Lot never responds. We don't know whether Lot was doing it for the proper intent or doing it for the improper intent. How do you know that he was doing it the shame Avera? Namar Rabbi Yochanan, kol pasuk hazeh the shame Avera ne'amar. That this entire pasuk that is mentioned by Lot is associated with sin. It says, "Va'isa Lot." Lot looked up. "Va'isa Eshedat Adonav Etenah." That's a reference to Eshed Potiphar with regards to Yosef, where the wife of Potiphar looks to sin with Yosef. Etenav, his eyes. So here we're quoting the pasuk by Lot when he looks after he separates from Abraham and he sees that the kikar, the plain of Sodom and Gomorrah, is Kigan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim. And he chooses to go there. So it says, Vaisa Lot, that is associated with the Tisa of the Eshet Potiphar. Et Einav, his eyes, Vayomer Shimshon, Ota Kachli, take me that Plishti woman as a wife, Ki hi Yishara Beinai, that she is right in my eyes, meaning that he sinned by going after his eyes. So to over here. Vayar, what did Lot see? Vayar Ota Shechem Ben Chamor. Similarly, the word bayar is used by Shechem ben Chamor when he rapes Dinah. Again, a negative association. Et kol kikar ha-yardain. He sees the whole plain of the Yardain. Ki be'ad isha zonah ad kikar lechem. He'll be giving away a loaf of bread for the isha zonah. So again, the word kikar used in a negative sense. Ki kulam mashke, that area was fertile and well irrigated. Elcha acharei ma'avai notnei lachmai umeimai simri pishtai. Shmanai v'shikuyai, from Hosea, where he gives him the zonah to marry, and the zonah follows after those that pay her. She goes after Mavai, those that love me, the ones who provide me bread, water, wool, flax, oil, and my drink. Again, it's a negative connotation. That pasuk that Lot chose to go down to Sodom v'Gomorrah, you see that when they parse the pasuk into sections, each terminology that's used there has a parallel terminology somewhere else in Tanakh, that is indicative of arayot, or something negative associated with arayot. And that's the premise by which they're saying that Lot was lahut acharei arayot. He ran after this type of behavior, and someone runs after that type of behavior, even in a situation where it seems they're innocent, they're probably doing the same thing or running after that behavior. Now your question, va minas onis. What are you talking about? Even if you think Lot was lahut, after he had tremendous desire for arayot, nevertheless, in this case, he was an anus because he was drunk, and there was no way that he knew what was going on. Tana mishum Rabbi Yosi by Rabbi Choni, lama nakud al vav. Why is there a dot on the vav? Shebikuma shel bechira. That it says there that Lo doesn't know lo b'shech vav lo b'kuma. He didn't know when he went to sleep with her, and he didn't know when he awoke from his sleep. And that he was so drunk that he had no clue what had happened. But yet, there's a little dot above the vav of kuma, It says there, lomar lecha, shebishechvah lo yada, that when he went to sleep, meaning that when he became drunk, he did not know what was going on, about bekuma yada. When he got up, he had an inkling of what had happened. Umay havalei the meivad, what could he have done? May da hava hava. Whatever had happened already. Why does it matter that he knows post the fact? Because nafkamino, the lepani achrina lo ibay le the mishtay. Nafkamino was that he shouldn't have drunk the next night. The fact that he drank alcohol or wine again the next night allowed himself to be put into that compromised position again. That was the problem. After he knew what had happened on the previous night, he shouldn't have allowed that to happen again on the subsequent night. And that's the criticism of Lot in this case. And that's why he's held accountable for the action. Again, connecting it back to his decision to go down to the Kikar HaYarden, adding that together with the circumstance that happened here, we say that Lot didn't have the purest of intentions when it came to Arayot. All right, Darash Rabo, the altar Girsa is Rava. My Nechtib, what is meant by the Pasuk? Ach Nifsha Mikiryat Oz. So the Pashut of Pasuk is Ach Nifsha, a wrong brother, Mikiryat Oz, is more formidable than a fortress or a stronghold. O Midyanim Kibriya Harmon. And such strife or difficulties are like the locks of a fortress or of a palace. Ach Nifsha Mikiryat Oz, Zelot Shepiresh Me Abraham. Umidyanim kivriya harmon, and those that are quarrelsome are like the lock of the palace. Shitil midyanim ben Yisrael Amon. He placed a quarrel or a permanent adversity between Israel and Amon. Shnemar lo yavo Amoni umoavi bikal Hashem. That the nations of Amon and Moab, who are the offspring of Lot, are never allowed to join Klal Yisrael. So it's not only true by Amon, it's true by Moab as well. But they're just playing on the Amon aspect of this. But here the Gemara interprets Ach Nifsha means the brother who has sinned or the brother who has made a poor choice, referring to Lot. Mikiryat Oz, they say, refers to Abraham, who is the stronghold. And so the Ach that pulled away or was Poshea B'Gabei Abraham Avinu, who is the fortress, then he ends up with a situation in which that strife leads to a locking out of Lot's descendants from being participants in Klal Yisrael. And that's what's said in the Pasuk, which is that Lot's separation from Abraham is what causes him to sin, or because he's separated away from Abraham, and therefore got involved with Sodom, and then had the incident with the destruction of Sodom, and then was together with his daughters that produced Amon and Moab. All that was precipitated because of his separation from Abraham. And that led to the terrible adversity or negative relationship that there is between Amon Amav and Israel, that they're never allowed to join the Klal Hashem. Even though, as the Tosfot HaRosh points out, Avram is the one who initiated in that case. Avram is the one who sent Lot away and said, you should leave. But what he suggests is that the problem was precipitated by a quarrel between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. So when Avram tells Lot, you gotta separate away, we gotta distance ourselves because of the problem, Lot shouldn't have just said, okay, let me go, and I'll decide where I'm going now. I'm off to the... He should have said, let's deal with the quarrel. Let's deal with the core issue. Or in essence, the actions of Lot or of his shepherds were causing the dissolution of the partnership between Abraham and Lot. The fact that he's not willing to deal with the core issue and accepts Abraham's dismissal, and in that way, Lot's responsible for the fact that Abraham is asking Lot to leave him. Dorish Rav of Itamar Yitzchak. So another drasha of Rava, and some say Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk in Mishlei, which is earlier on in that same parak we quoted before, in pasuk Aleph it says, l'ta'ava yivakesh nivrad, b'chol tushia yitgala. The one who pulls himself aside or isolates himself in pursuit of his desires, b'chol tushia yitgala. In the gatherings of those that are wise, it will be revealed, l'ta'ava yivakesh nivrad, zeloch nivra me'Avraham. The desires caused him to separate away from Abraham because he chose to go a different path. And that is the pasuk that we quoted before, by which Chazal were trying to show us that Lot was lusting after the Arayot. That pasuk is also indicative of why Lot left Abraham. He looks out. Abraham says, go north or go south. And I'll do the opposite. You go north, I'll go south. You go south, I'll go north. Lot looks out and says, I'm not going north or south. I'm going east. Because he looks out to the Kikar HaYadein, and he sees it is Kigan Hashem, Keretz Mitzrayim. It's just like Eretz Mitzrayim. That's where Lot and Abraham just came from. They were just in Mitzrayim, and they gathered all this wealth in Mitzrayim. Lot wants to go back to Mitzrayim. And he looks over to the Kikar HaYadein, and he sees Mitzrayim. That is because the area is Kigan Hashem, Keretz Mitzrayim, but because it is irrigated, well irrigated. The rest of Eretz Yisrael is dependent on rain for its water. Over in the Kikar HaYadein, before the destruction of Sodom v'Amorah, that area was the Jordan River continuing downward, and there was no Dead Sea. It was a very fertile plain. And he looks down there and he says, that's where I want to be. That's exactly like Mitzrayim. The fertile plains that are fed by the Nile. These were the fertile plains fed by the Yarden. That eventually leads to the destruction of Sodom v'Amorah and the salt that's there that makes it infertile. But before that, it was Kigan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim. And that's what draws Lot to go there. So that's the Tavai Vakesh Nifrad. He separated away because he had desires. He wanted to go back to Mitzrayim. B'chol Tushia Yidgala. And Tushia, the Gemara in other places, darshins to be a reference to Torah. It says, B'chol Tushia. In every conclave, in every gathering, or in the Torah, Yidgala, it will be revealed or exposed. Shinit Gala Klono B'bate Knesio to Bate Midrashot. That his embarrassment is made clear or open in the Bate Midrash and Bate Knesio. That is because we read the Parshiot in the Torah. And again, it was recorded what Lot did for posterity. And therefore, in the Bate Midrash and the Bate Knesio, he will everlastingly have this embarrassment because of his choice to go down to the place of lust and desire. Tznan, Amoneo Moavi, Asurim, Isur Olam. And that is because the Torah tells us not only about the story of Lot, but also the fact that Ammon and Moab are permanently disqualified from entering into Klal Yisrael. The reason being, the Torah gives in Devarim different reasons. They didn't greet you when you came out of Mitzrayim and provide for you water and food, as well as the fact that they hired Bilam to curse Bnei Yisrael. But here, the Medrash of Chazal are trying to say that it's correlated with the behavior of Lot by Abraham. That's what caused or precipitated it. Vamaula, Tamar Zinta, Zimri Zina. Tamar acted in a way of znut by sleeping with her father-in-law, Yehuda. Zimri Zina and Zimri ben Salo sins with Kazik Batsur by the Baal Peor. Tamar Zinta Yatsu Mimena Malachim Nevi'im. Tamar has descendants that are kings and Nevi'im, meaning the Davidic line emerges from Tamar, as well as the fact that we know that Amots and Amatzia were brothers. That means Yishayahu was also a descendant of the line of Yehuda and of Tamar. Zimri Zina, Naflu Kamarvot Misrael. Zimri sins, and you have the plagues and the killing that take place because of the sin of Baal Peor. Avram Nachnitzah, you see from this, Gdola Aveira Lishma, Mimitzvah Shalol Lishma. Greater is an Aveira that has done the Shem Shamayim than a Mitzvah that has done Shalol the Shem Shamayim. Shnemar, Tivorach Minishaim Yael, Eshet Chevir HaKenim, Minishaim Ba'ohel, Tivorach. Now who are the Nashim Ba'ohel? And what does that mean? That she should be blessed like the women of the tent. Man Ninu, Men Niu Nashim Ba'ohel. Who are the women of the tents? Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valeya, the Imahot, are known as the Nashim Ba'ohel. And it says about Yael, Tivorach. She should be blessed amongst the women of the Ohel, meaning amongst the mothers of our nation. And that is because she took out the arch enemy of Klal Yisrael, Sisra, when he's running away from the battle. And is that really true? Person should always be engaged in Torah and Mitzvot. That's the Girsa over here. In other places in Shas, the Girsa is Torah or Mitzvot. It's not clear that this has application to both. Over here in our Gemara, it has both Torah and Mitzvot, showing you that this principle should apply to both of them, which is that one should learn Shlo Lishma, or do a Mitzvah Lishlo Lishma, because eventually you will come about to do it Lishma. If you do it Shlo Lishma, there's a possibility of doing Lishma. Nefesh HaChaim, and some essays that he writes in the Ruach HaChaim, on his commentary in Avot, over there he explains the concept of Shlo Lishma, Ba Lishma, that you have to be engaged. If a person is not engaged, there's no chance they're come to Lishma. The person says, I'm only going to daven when I really feel it. Only when I have that right emotional state, they'll never end up davening. Because they'll never find that exact emotional state. If a person davens every day, then there will be a chance that he'll hit that emotional state and end up davening in a proper way or having the proper kavana. You got to be in it to win it. And if you're not playing, then it's never going to happen. So that's why there's a value in the lo-lishma, because it brings to lishma. If you're never engaged, then you're never going to do a lishma, because if you're waiting around for lishma, those opportunities are rare, and they may never happen. So Amar Rav Yochanan, if that's the case, how can you claim that a person who sins shalishma is better than someone who does a mitzvah or learns Torah shalishma? So Ema, reword this to say, to mitzvah shalishma, it's equal to. Navera lishma is equivalent to or equal to a mitzvah that's done shalo lishma. How do we know this? Rabbi Yochanan, sheva bi'ilot ba'al oto rasha ba'oto sha'a. At that moment, Sisra had seven intercourses with Ya'el. Shenemar, because the pasuk says in Shirat Deborah, ben raglea kara nafal shachav, ben raglea kara nafal, basher kara sham nafal shadud. And so here you have the verbs that appear seven times, which is ben raglea, kara, one, nafal, two, shachav, three, ben raglea, kara, four, nafal, five, vashir, kara, six, sham nafal, seven, shadud, indicating that he slept with her seven times. Vaha kamitanya me'avera, how can you call it an avera lishma when she's getting benefit from it? She may not want to sleep with him, but in the end, the physical pleasure that is associated with it is accruing to her. And we have a general principle that there's no such thing as mitasek b'chalavayim v'arayot. There's no such thing as unintentional engagement in eating or in arayot. That is because even if the person has no intent or is just playing around and it doesn't even understand what they're doing, nevertheless, in the end, the eating and the arayot bring pleasure. In the end, they have physical pleasure that's associated with them. And that is unavoidable in these cases. So how can you call it an avera lishma? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Mishim Rabbi Shim Bar Yochai, Afilu Tovatam Shel Rishayim Rahi Etzal Tzadikim. Even the benefit that's provided by Rishayim is a negative for the Tzadikim. And so despite the fact that there might have been some physical pleasure here, because it was a Rasha, because it was someone like Sisra, it did not bring any benefit to her. We can't count that as a pleasure or something positive. That's why it's considered to be an avera lishma. And as the Rosh explains that Ya'el was doing l'shem shamayim because all she wanted to do was weaken Sisra so that she could kill him. Or in essence, because her intent was to weaken him and kill him, she had no pleasure in this whatsoever. The whole incident was repulsive to her, and the only reason she engaged in it was to rid herself of this terrible enemy of Klal Yisrael. And for that reason, it's considered to be a mitzvah shelo lishma. Even though technically there might have been physical hana'ah, that physical hana'ah was overwhelmed by her disgust and disdain for this individual. As opposed to the imahot, they're by definition, even though they might have done things lishma, they still got hana'ah from their bi'ah, because that's just a natural side effect of engaging in that type of behavior. Now obviously, it's very dangerous ground to be playing in, both the daughters of Lot, as well as the case of Ya'el, when they're taking extrajudicial action by doing an Avera, but doing it Lishma, that's a great thing, and the Gemara here holds it up as being something that is exceptional, but it's not something that many people are capable of doing, as well as that we always have, or we always suspect that there are ulterior motives in these situations. And one should not try to do an Avera Lishma. It only happens in these rare instances where sometimes there is an Avera Lishma that works out that way, by Tamar, by the case of the daughters of Lot, and also over here by the case of Ya'el, but those are few and far between, and it's not something that we try or aspire towards. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Lo Olam Yasuk Adam B'Torah V'Mitzvot, Afil Shlo Lishma, Shemitok Shlo Lishma, Ba Lishma. Again, this principle that we just mentioned before, that one should be engaged in things not for the proper intent, not the shem shemayim, because when you do it shlo lishma, it's ba lishma. Shebschar membet korbanot sheikriv Balak harasha, of the 42 korbanot that were brought by Balak when Bilam is trying to curse Bnei Yisrael, zachavi atzdam imenu Rut, then his descendant was Rut ha-Moaviyah, and Balak ben Zippor is the melech Moav. Tam Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Rut bat beno shel Eglon, that Rut was the granddaughter of Eglon, Melech Moav, Ben Benosh of Balak, Melech Moav, who was the grandson of Balak, the king of Moav, we discussed this in Perek HaChelek, in Sanhedrin, as well as in other places, that the dating or timeline here is very difficult in terms of Rut being the granddaughter of Eglon, and then Eglon being the grandson of Balak. There's just too many years in between for there to be such short generations. The Baalei Tosafot in one location says, when it says Bat Beno or Ben Beno, it does not mean literally a grandchild. It just means the descendant of. That Eglon was a descendant of Balak, and Ruth is a descendant of Eglon. But not to say that there's an exact number. And the same problem appears at the end of Megillat Ruth, where the generations that go all the way from Yehuda's children to David HaMelech is just too short, given the amount or span of time that happens in between. And depending on which day you think, whether Boaz lived at the beginning of the period of the Shoftim, at the end of the period of the Shoftim, either way, there's just too big a gap for the number of parties that are there. So again, you have to say something along the lines of that these are descendants of each other, but it's not a exact father-to-son relationship that's being noted over there. How do you know that Hashem rewards an individual even for the simple words or the way that one expresses themselves? They do it in an appropriate or better manner than Hashem rewards them. From the case here with the Lot and his two daughters, the elder daughter calls her son Moab, which says, Me'av, from my father. Do not, you may not provocate or cause anguish with regards to battle with Moab. You're not allowed to engage in war. What you can do is cause them difficulty, whether that's guerrilla warfare or whether that means that you can be provocative in nature. That is allowed, because the only thing that's not allowed is full engaged war. On the other hand, the younger daughter calls him Ben Ami, Amon, Amarlei, Altitzurev, Altitzgarbam, Klau. Over there, it doesn't qualify the statement with Milchama. It says, period. You may not provoke them. You may not cause any anguish to them. And that's irrespective of whether it's at war or not war. Afilu Tzurei Lo. Even causing them difficulty, whether it's engaging in guerrilla warfare, or that you may not provoke them, in either case, the qualifier of Milchama does not appear here. So because she was more tzanua and didn't say me'av, that it was from my father, she is rewarded for that. Person should always run to do a mitzvah, be the first to be and do the mitzvah. For the one night that the elder daughter preceded the younger daughter, she joined the kingdom of Israel four generations earlier, because David HaMelech, who's a descendant of Ruth HaMoabiyah, ascends to the throne and becomes the Melech Israel. Oved, who is the child of Ruth, who has Yishai, who has David, and then you have Shlomo HaMelech. Amon's contribution only appears later on in the time of Rechavam, because Rechavam ben Shlomo is born to his wife, Naama HaAmonit. And only Rechavam, so therefore there is a delay. It takes Amon four generations longer to join Klal Yisrael than it does for Moav. And that is because she jumped into the mitzvah. She was first in line, even though, again, we condemn this action from the side of Lot. On the other hand, from the side of his daughters, we are complimentary that they did an Avera Lishma. And the main difference between them is the fact that the daughters speak up. They say something. They explain the reason for their actions. Lot is completely silent, both through the whole process as well as after the process. He never says anything to justify or to qualify his actions. And in that way, we saw that Chazal are very critical of Lot, saying that he must have been doing it because of his desires and his lusts for Arayot, and not for a proper purpose. But the daughters who did it with the Shem Shemayim, then the one who went first is rewarded that they joined Klal Yisrael four generations before Amon. All right, we're going to stop here. Seven lines down on the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph.